that I decided I wanted to speak about this morning is appropriate chumras for Pesach. Meaning Pesach is a Yom Tov of a lot of chumras, and there's a lot of pushback on a lot of those chumras. So, like, what are good chumras to have for Pesach, and what are good chumras not to have for Pesach? We might touch on other things also that have nothing to do with chumras, but that's going to be the basic idea. It's just to do a run through of what I think are some of our chumras are just hakpados that people aren't so makbid about. They're actually ikar adin. It's just that people may not be aware that it's the ikar adin, and people aren't necessarily so makbid about it. So that's you know, like for the YU Torah title, you know, it's good and bad chumras, you know, for Pesach or something like that. So I was actually just talking to Rabbi Yaakov Talbus up on the sixth floor, and I asked him, I told him I'm giving shir on that topic. So I said, Nu, well, you got anything good, a good chumra for Pesach? And he had actually a very nice chumra that I thought, that I didn't even think to include. The chumra that he suggested was that to be extra machmir about anything that goes in your mouth on Pesach, meaning, okay, we're not going to be machmir about the shampoos and the soaps and things like that, but just be careful about anything that you're going to put in your mouth on Pesach. So for example, I'm asked all the time, where I live in the Five Towns, There are a couple of fruit stores that do not have hashkacha because they're fruit stores and they don't sell Israeli fruits. They sell regular fruits and they don't sell anything else. So there's no real kashrus problem in a fruit store. So they're using the same knives they use the whole year to cut the same cantaloupes and honeydews and watermelons and everything else. So like, what could possibly be wrong? So can you buy? So people are always asking, can you buy a sliced fruit platter from a fruit store? So typically speaking, throughout the rest of the year, yeah, there's nothing wrong with buying a sliced fruit platter from a store that sells only fruit. If they're selling hot meat in the back and they may be using the same knife to cut the hot meat that they're cutting your pineapples with, so then yeah, then that's a problem. But if it's just a fruit store, it's no problem. On Pesach, it's a nice chumrah to have. Maker didn't require? No. But nice chumrah to have on Pesach to not put something in your mouth, unless it has hashkacha. I've heard Rabbi Saul Reisman say on several occasions that he has a hakpada throughout the year, that he just never puts anything in his mouth that doesn't have hashkacha, regardless of whether it's a type A ingredient, what they call, I think, in the OU office, a type A ingredient that doesn't require hashkacha, just not to put anything in your mouth that doesn't require hashkacha. So on Pesach, I think that that's an appropriate chumrah. Nice one for Rabbi Talbus. Yeah.
So like leaving the things, putting away the things that were on the counter at the time Chametz was out.
Right, things like that. Those are good chumras that we observe. But I want to get into more detailed kinds of chumras. That's just like a suggestion. But I want to get into some more detailed kinds of hakpados and chumras. There is a halacha that a cup for the dalakosos should hold the revius, which according to Grach Noe is just under 3 fluid ounces, and according to Chazon Ish is just over 5 fluid ounces. I saw that Rabbi Heinemann, I assume based on the Mesha, holds it's about 3.7 ounces would work for dalet kosos. So you get a 4-ounce kos, or you want to be extra machmir, a 5-ounce kos to use for dalet kosos. That's wonderful. The post can point out, though, that it's best to drink, the Chaf Yaakov writes in the Sinai Shulchan Aruch, that it's best to drink not only rov kos, best to drink kala kos, the entirety of the kos. So normally, you only have to drink them lo lugma. Normally, the halacha is that, that a cheekful is all you need to drink from a kos for shel bracha. But the Gemara says that you should drink rov kos by dalet kosos. So the question that Rishonim struggle with is, why is this any different than any other kosher bracha? Kosher bracha you normally only need milo lugmav. Nehechi tesi, that when it comes to dalet kosos, all of a sudden you need rov kosos. So Tosus writes that it's not a special din by Pesach. It's not a special din by dalet kosos. It's just that a milo lugmav for the average person is about a rov revius. So if you're using a kos, that's a revius, and you take a milo lugmav, you're having a rov revius. So when the Gemara says that you should drink rov kos, it's assuming you get the perfect 4-ounce kos, and you're drinking 2.1 ounces, because that's exactly a milo lugmav, and therefore it's all one and the same. However, the Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam holds that you taka need rov kos, that a milo lugmav is not sufficient. And why is it that the din of dalet kosos is going to be different than the din of every other kosher bracha, where all you require is a milo lugmav? So the Maharal, in his commentary in Psachim, and the Briska Rav, both independently of each other, both said the same basic idea, that there are two kiyumim in the drinking of dalet kosos. Unlike shita satosos, where shita satosos seems to be that there's only one kiyum. It's a bracha lakos, it's a kosher bracha like any other kosher bracha. And therefore, just like by kiddush on a Friday night, one person could say kiddush for everybody, have only one kos in front of that one person, and they could be the only one that drinks, and they could be motzi everybody else. Tosos holds you could do that at the Seder also, that one person could be motzi everybody else and be the only one that drinks. But unlike Tosfos, we paskin that there is an additional din. There is the classic din of bracha lakos, where one person could be mostly everybody else, and then there's another inyan, another mitzvah of dalit kosos, that you have to actually drink. Each individual has to drink dalit kosos. There's a mitzvah, b'chol dover dor chayev adam liros esatzmo, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa, that in each and every generation, a person has to see himself as if they are leaving Mitzrayim. And then on the d'rabbanan level, there's a mitzvah, the chayev adam l'haros esatzmo, that we have to behave in a way and do certain demonstrative behaviors that show it's as if we are leaving Mitzrayim. How do we accomplish that? So it says the Brisk Rav, it says the Maral, we accomplish that in two ways, Heseba and Dalet Kosos. So Dalet Kosos is a kiyum of, in addition to being a kiyum of Koshal Bracha, it's a kiyum of Laharos Esatzmo Kiyiluhu Yatsumi Mitzrayim. So the Maral and the Griz say that everybody has to drink as a kiyum of Laharos Esatzmo. So it follows that when the Gemara says to drink Rov Kos, the Rambam learns that's not the din of Melo Lugmav that you have by every Koshal Bracha. That would be enough for a Koshal Bracha. Rov Kos is a din in Chayev Adam Laharos Esatzmo. Rov Kos is a din Dafka in the Lela Seder in the Dalet Kosos. And in such a case, if there's a din that you need to drink Dalet Kosos, the halacha is Rubo Kikulo. In order to drink Dalet Kosos, you need to drink Rov Kos in order to make it as if you drank the whole Kos. So you drink Rov Kos four times, and there you have a din of Rubo Kikulo. Magen Avraham says that whenever there's a din of Rubo Kikulo, Rubo is Kikulo, but not quite as good as Kulo. So Kulo would always be the L'chachila. So whenever you have a din of Rubo Kikulo, it's even better to actually drink Kulo, to actually drink the entirety of the Kos. So and the same would apply over here. That comes up in the following context. The Gemara in Maseches Chulin says l'chadchili you should shecht kol ha-simanim, not just rov ha-simanim, not just rov of the kan of veshet, but the entirety of the kan of veshet. Why? Rov is good enough because of rubo kikulo. But whenever you have rubo kikulo, apparently it's better, it's a l'chadchila to do kulo. To machlokas Rashi and Tosos, whether that l'chadchila about shchita is a l'chadchila d'oraisa or l'chadchila d'rabbanan. Pshat often points out that the Lev Aryeh writes that the Machlokas Rashi and Tosos in the first parak of Maseches Chulin about that Gemara in the second parak of Maseches Chulin, whether the din of lechatchila shachting kol asimanim is a lechatchila midaraisa or lechatchila midrabanan, that they're probably arguing whether shchita is a mitzvah or a matir. That if shchita is a mitzvah, so it's shaykh to say that you have a lechatchila daraisa and a mitzvah. But if something, if shchita is only a matir, it's not shaykh to have a lechatchila midaraisa and a matir. A matir is either matir or it's not matir. It either works or it doesn't. The item either becomes mutter or it doesn't. There's no such thing as a lechatchila and a matir. So that would mean that it would only be a lechatchila midrabanan. That's how the Lev Aryeh suggests. So a mitzvah can be a lechatchila daraisa. A matir wouldn't have lechatchila daraisa. So we assume la halacha shchita is only a matir, not a mitzvah. So the lechatchila of kol asimanim by shchita is only a lechatchila midrabanan. But over here by dalet kosos, it's a mitzvah. Right, dalet kosos is a mitzvah. There's a kiyum we assume, like Shitas HaRambam, that in addition to the regular kiyum of Koshal Bracha, right, that's why we don't just have the guy leading the Seder having a kos in front of him. We all have a kos in front of us. We all drink from the kos, and that's why really we're supposed to drink Rov HaKos. We're not only supposed to drink Melo Lugmav. That's just for regular Koshal Bracha. We're supposed to drink Rov HaKos because you have this additional kiyum of dalet kosos. And whenever you're drinking Rov HaKos because of this kiyum of dalet kosos, it's because you're relying on Rubo Kikulo. So it's an appropriate chumrah. It's a nice chumrah to drink Kulo. Now, you could have an 8-ounce kos, and then Kulo is insane, right? But no one told you to have an 8-ounce kos. Try to find yourself a nice 4 or 5-ounce kos. and then you could manage to drink kulo, and that's a nice chumrah, or at least rubo, and that's probably required mikra din to drink rov hakos each time. If you can't drink kulo each time because that's too much for you to drink kulo each time, so then at least on the first kos, certainly at the first seder where it's a kosher kiddush, right? So to be extra machmir makes sense. Yeah.
So I know we mentioned this a few shiurim ago, but for someone who really doesn't like wine or has like health problems, the absolute minimum they can have is the majority of a revius.
So you try to have a minimal size revius for someone who can't handle much, and then it's a malolugmav, which is a rov revius, which will end up being an ounce and a half or something. Right. Yeah. So it's a very minimal amount. Right. Meaning all of these chumras, I should be clear about this, all of these chumras are for people who can handle chumras. Meaning if someone has digestive problems, if someone has other issues, so then your chumra turns into a kula. Because there's also a mitzvah called Simchas Yom Tov and Oneg Yom Tov, potentially a mitzvah called Oneg Yom Tov. And if you're ruining that by doing these things, then you're Yatzuch Chumrasu Kulasu. I'm talking about in a case where it's not going to ruin, you know, if a person, I have a nephew, for example, has Crohn's. So if he wants to decide he's going to be Machmer and Chaznish Shir of Matzah, that's idiotic, right? Meaning that would be crazy. He can't digest things as easily. So especially roughage like that, he's not going to be able to digest things normally. It's going to take away his whole Simchas Yom Tov. Might even, and it could even be worse. It could be disastrous. So we don't recommend these chumras for people who have such conditions. Now, the chumra I wanted to mention, or the hakpat, the chumra I already said. So the chumra is to drink kalakos, which is an appropriate chumra if you can handle it. But the hakpada that should be mentioned, that needs to be mentioned, it's not a chumra. It's just something that people get wrong all the time. And that is, if you're yotzei the fourth kos with a rov revius, and you choose not to drink an entire revius on the fourth kos, you should not say the bracha achrona that follows in the Haggadah. Most people just read the Haggadah. So whatever appears in the Haggadah, so what comes after the fourth kos in the Haggadah? There's a bracha achrona to say bracha achaz mein shalosh. So people always just say it. But if all you had was a rov revius and you didn't have a revius, you're not chayiv in bracha achrona. So if you're not chayiv in bracha achrona, you probably should not say the bracha achrona. The Rav Moshe used to be makbid on the biggest shear of revius for the first and the last kos, for the first and the fourth kos. So why dafka the first and the fourth kos? So the first kos makes sense because it's kiddush, and especially when it's Friday night, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, so he's going to be makbid for a chazanish shir on the first kos. Why dafka on the last kos? Because it's chashash bracha levatala. He wants to make sure that he's having a proper shir of a revius in order to recite the bracha, that it shouldn't be a bracha levatala. That's what that chumra is based on, to have like a larger shir, or to maybe be makbid on kol hakos, dafka for the last kos, so that you can make sure that you have a full shir, so that you could say a bracha achrona, which is printed in the Haggadah. The entire Seder is within the context of four brachos ala kos. And if you hold brachos hamazons in the kos, and you hold that, you know, the Tosfos raises a question, Masechus Brachos, then if you hold brachos hamazons to in the kos, right? And there's a shita in Masechus Brachos that all shivas haminim require a full brachos hamazon. Right, that it's not only for bread that you require birchas hamazon, which means anytime you have wine, you need birchas hamazon. So Tosfos asks, it's a never-ending cycle, right? The first time you drink wine, that's it. You're going to be drinking wine forever now, because every time you're going to be benching alakos, and then when you're benching alakos, you got to drink from the kos, and now you're going to have a new chiyuv of birchas hamazon. And then it's going to. So Tosfos asks Takasha. So Tosfos suggests that maybe the bracha achrona, that the benching covers the kos that you haven't yet drunk, that you're only going to drink when you're mevarich ala kos, because that's considered part of the su'udah, that it becomes part of the su'udah. And this is what Rav Shapta likes to talk about a lot, that it could be on the Seder night that the mitzvos halayla define the su'udah. So just like you have this idea in Tosfos, that the benching, anything associated with the benching, is therefore defined as part of the Suuda on the Seder night. All the mitzvah sachila of the night, the matzah and the maror and everything else, is considered to, the kosos, it's all considered to be, that is your chiyuv Suuda. But anyway, so again, chumrah number one, well, Rabbi Talbot says chumrah number one is anything you put in your mouth on Pesach, you should be absolutely certain of its origins and its kashrus lepesach. Chumrah number two is to drink kalakos. Hakpada about chumrah, relating to chumrah number two, is try to make sure that at least on the last kos you drink a full shear, because you want to be able to say a bracha achrona afterwards. So even if you're not going to drink a full kos for all of them, but on the last kos you want to guzzle it down in order to make sure that you're able to say a bracha achrona. Yeah.
In the interest of comparing chumras, would it be better to have a lower quality wine halachically and drink more of it, or like a heavy wine that's great for red and like full wine?
So I also wanted to talk about that a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the type of wine that we use. I'm going to skip around just because you asked that question. You should try to drink wine that's appropriate for the Seder. The Rambam holds that wine with any extra ingredients, like sugar added to it, is not wine. It's chamar medina. The Rambam holds it loses its shem yayin when you add sugar to wine. Jews are known to have such wine, right? Cream Concord. Try to give that to a guy. They're not going to be interested. Right? That's like a, it's like these syrupy, gross, sweet wines. This is like a uniquely Jewish thing. The Manischewitz wines, that's a uniquely Jewish thing, and it is a uniquely non-Maimonidean thing, right? The Rambam says that that is not wine. That has a din of Chamar Medina. Really, we shouldn't use such wines for Kiddush either. Where does it come from? I heard from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. I don't know where he knows this from, but he says that the history, I thought this was fascinating, said that the history of why Jews use such syrupy, sweet wine is that when Rabbi Yaakov Yosef came to New York in the 1890s, he became the chief rabbi of New York, and it was a disaster. It went terribly. The whole experience was awful. He was whatever. But he suffered bezeinus beyond, but whatever. He came to New York and he noticed that all the Jews were drinking wines that were owned by Jewish wine companies, and in all the Jewish wine companies, they had non-Jewish workers, and everything was Stam Yenem. No one was makbid about anything in terms of Stam Yenem, and he couldn't convince them to do things properly, but one thing he was able to convince them was to add sugar to the wine. And his cheshbon was, if you can get them to add sugar to the wine, at least lufi shitas Rambam, it's not going to be stam yenam, because it's not going to be yayin. So if he can make them make wine that's not actually yayin, then at least lufi shitas Rambam, they're not going to be having yayin, and therefore it's going to be he'll save them the stam yenam lufi shitas Rambam. That's and that stuck. So the Manischewitz wine and the cream concord and all that stuff is because of we owe that to Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. But ideally, it's best not to. We don't pass on the Rambam, right? We pass on that wine with sugar added is yayin. It's not. We're talking about chumras over here today. We're talking about chumras. So again, I should have also mentioned. I should have given a lot of hakdamas before I started going through chumras. One of the hakdamas I should mention is this is for when you run your own household in your own seder or whatever. This is not when you're eating at your parents. It's not when you're. This is like when you get to call the shots and you get to decide what things are going to be. So these are nice things to think about that maybe you want to incorporate into how you're going to run things. When I was married, when I was single, I stayed at my friend's house. My wife is from Highland Park, New Jersey, so I stayed at my friend's house in Highland Park. I represent wives from Highland Park, New Jersey. So I stayed at my friend's house in Highland Park, Rabbi Yecheskel Freundlich. At the time, he was Josh Freundlich, and we he was not yet married either. And on our way to shul, his dad said, Josh, can you pick up the newspaper and bring it into the house for me? And I remember he picked up the newspaper and he said, funny thing about this paper, when I get married, he was already engaged, when I get married, this is going to be muktzah. And then he brought it into the house. Meaning that there is what to rely on, so he did it. But, you know, when you get to call your own shot, so then things are going to change a little bit. So nowadays we have wines with a good hechsher. We have wines, you know, that don't have sugar added. So ideally, you should get wine without sugar. Also, the Ramban's shita is that wine that is not red is not wine. It happens also to be Daniel Israel's shita. We found that on Purim. But wine that is not red is not wine according to the shita of the Ramban. So it's kedai to use red wine if you can. Meaning you want a wine that is lechaladeos, has a din of wine. Another thing that is kedai to be careful about that people are not aware of, and that is that most wine stores are not under a hashgacha. Meaning most wine stores, because they sell a lot of scotch and a lot of the scotches wouldn't get a hashgacha, and scotches in general aren't under hashgacha. There are very few high-end scotch that's under hashgacha. Most wine stores aren't under hashgacha. So you go into a Frum-owned wine store, and you buy whatever wine looks good. Look at the hashgacha on the back of the bottle of wine. Some of them come from like these weird places where you have no idea who the hashgacha is. Look, if you see that it says OU, okay, Hadatze de Charedis, I don't know, whatever, something that you recognize, so then you know that it's good to use. But a lot of these wines just have these weird hashgachas, and giving hashgacha on wine is not pashut. It's not an easy hashgacha to give, because Tam Yenim is a real issue, and you're not going to find Jewish workers in all these places. So it's a very, very complicated, and not every time you see Hebrew letters on the back of a wine bottle doesn't mean that it's kosher. In fact, a fellow just told me that he bought a big bottle of wine at the duty-free shop in Israel, and he brought it home, and he looked more closely at the bottle, and the Hebrew words on the back of the bottle said, lo kosher. So that was it. So apparently they're doing a service to the community, to the kosher community, the kosher consumer, that you should know that this is Stam Yenam, that this is certified Stam Yenam. So, you know, the Rabbi Reisman said that he has a hakpada in his family that they don't eat grape-flavored anything ever. Like, no grape-flavored anything. Because just grape stuff is just too complicated. So he said that his grandson was in school and they were giving out Laffy Taffys, and he got a grape one, and he said, no, I have to trade it in because in my family we don't eat grape flavored ones. And the Mora got very upset, very insulted by that. What do you mean? It has a good hashgacha. And she happened to know the person that gives hashgacha in Laffy Taffy, you know, for Laffy Taffy. So she called up the mashgiach from Laffy Taffy and she said, you know, Rabbi Reisman has such a hakpada that he doesn't use grape flavored Laffy Taffys. And the mashgiach said, that's taka good hakpada. That's a good chumrah. You know, that's not a bad one. So whether it's a good chumrah or not, as far as all grape flavored things, at least the wine that we use for Kiddush V'Adalah, for Dalet Kosos, it's especially for Dalet Kosos, where there's next hakpada to use red, it's a good idea to use red wine. It's a good idea to use wine that doesn't have any sugar added. If there are no non-Frum or non-Jewish people at your Seder, it's also a good idea to use non-Mavushal wine. If there are non-Frum people at your Seder, that is a bad Chumrah. Then you want to make sure that the wine is Mavushal. Yeah.
Yeah, so just to talk about that specific Chumrah, non-Mavushal. As long as we're talking about Shita Sarambam, I think I remember last year when we were going through Shita, we're going through Shita Sarambam regarding what you can use for Dalet Kosos and Heels. Mavushal wine makes it not royal.
Nasei chal gabei mizbeach.
So you can't use red wine that's mavushal or red
right.
wine in general.
But you have to know when a chumrah is going to lead to a kula. So if there are non-religious people around, so that could lead to a kula in terms of the halachos of yayin. So better to be to pass in the yikaradin and not take on these chumrahs. That's the thing with chumrahs always. You always have to be careful of two things with chumrah. Number one, that it doesn't lead to a kula, and number two, that it's appropriate, meaning that it's not a chumrah that's like a person could say, I'm going to take on a chumrah, I'm going to start eating like Rav Aaron Leib Steinman used to eat. You know, like that is not an appropriate chumrah for most of us. I was listening to a rabbi from Toronto talk recently. He was talking about Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he said, Rav Chaim ate like a normal person. He said, when Rav Steinman came to Toronto, he was in Toronto for like 36 hours, and he ate a banana. Like, that was it. You know, like that's not what we're supposed to do. It's a nice chumrah to have such precious or whatever if your name is Rav Aaron Leib Steinman. Meaning, for the rest of us, it's like the Gemara says in Chulin about Anaka Chala Bar Chamra Lagabe Avua Bahamilsa, that about waiting between fleshigs and milchigs, that I'm like vinegar, the son of wine, in comparison to my father, because I only wait misuda lasuda, but my father would wait 24 hours. Or Sturmbach writes in the name of the Bali Musar, if you think your father had such a good chumra of waiting 24 hours between fleshigs and milchigs, why don't you just do the same thing? You can also wait 24 hours. So that's what the Bali Musar point out. No, because it would be ridiculous if I would do that, meaning I'm not holding at a place to have such a chumra. So I'm trying to suggest chumras that I think for Bnei Yeshiva, for smicha students, are reasonable chumras. Now, I'm not saying you have to take all of these. I'm not saying you have to take any of them. I'm just saying these would be what I think are appropriate chumras, so long as you could be careful, A, that you're calling the shots, and B, that it's not going to lead to a kula in something else. Michal Shabbos Preferencia.
For Dal Kosis, their value liking the wine. If I like white wine better, should I go with that or red wine because Talach would be more?
Probably better to have red. Probably better to have red. Okay. Another interesting one, and this is just, yeah?
You're with non-from people, and you are the from guy.
Why do you keep doing this? Okay, yes.
What should you do with Mishal and non-Mishal wine? What should you personally do?
I still think you should have Mavushal wine because people are going to be pouring. People know they're supposed to pour for each other and things like that, so you just don't want to deal with that. The Gemara has Machlokas Amorayim. When we say that you're supposed to say Birchas Hashir, so the Gemara in Pesachim Akuf Yud Tes or something, my Birchas Hashir, what is Birchas Hashir? So the Gemara says, has Machlok Samarim, whether it means Yahalu Lucha at the end of Hallel, so that goes together with Hallel. Now, all year it's dependent on Minag, whereas Seder night, it's everybody's obligated in the Hallel, so the Birchas Hashir is a critical component. And the other opinion is that, no, it's Nishmas Kol Chai in Yishtabach. That Yishtabach is the bracha, Nishmas Kol Chai is part of the bracha of Yishtabach, and Yishtabach is the Birchas Hashir. So we say both, right? We do Yishtabach and the Halalucha. But the Rashbam learns that we say both. There is a Nusach, if you open up different Haggadahs around your own Seder table, you will find a different Seder Hadvarim at the end of the Haggadah when it comes to this part, when it comes to Halil and Nishmas and Yahalulucha and where the Yahalulucha is. Nusach Sfard finishes Halil and then does Kili Olam Chazdo without Yahalulucha, and then they save Yahalulucha for the end of Nishmas, right? So they finish the Halil, they do all the Hodol Hashem Kitovs, right? And then they then Nishmas, and then at the end of Nishmas you have the Yahalulucha. Each family should determine what nusach they do, meaning it's not right for half the people to do one nusach and the other half the people to do a different nusach. Did I say that right? Nusach Sfard, meaning nusach Ashkenaz, we say Halel, then Yalulucha without the Chasima, and then Nishmas, and then Yishtabach. Nusach Sfard says Halel, Kilom Chazda without Yalucha, then save the Yalucha for the end of Nishmas. Right? So each family should, meaning it's strange and inappropriate to have different people doing different things at the Seder. So if you are a family that your minig is that you daven Nusach Ashkenaz, so everyone should be on the same, even though this year you're using the Haggadah of this Chassidus Rebbe, and that's the fascinating Haggadah where you're learning all these beautiful insights from, that's great. But when it comes to the text of the Haggadah that you're going to say, if you're a Nusach Ashkenaz person, so then you should be using a Haggadah that reflects Nusach Ashkenaz, and vice versa. If you're a Nusach Sfarad person, even though you may be interested in reading the Divrei Torah of the Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva, but when it comes to the Seder HaDvarim, so that's again not a chumrah, just a hakpada that people are unaware of. The Chayyadim quotes from the Gra that normally you can abridge Pesukei Dezimra on a regular weekday, right, by saying Baruch Shamar Ashrei and Yishtabach. The Chayyadim quotes from the Gra that on Shabbos and Yom Tov you need to say Nishmas as well, because Nishmas Kol Chai is part of the bracha of Yishtabach. A lot of people are unaware of that, don't realize that Nishmas Kol Chai is the beginning of Yishtabach. That's where Salvechik's practice was, that he would stand throughout all of Nishmas also, that he was makbid to stand throughout all of Nishmas, because it's part of Yishtabach, that it's the same as Yishtabach. So it makes sense that it would go into Yishtabach, and we don't skip Nishmas.
Is Nishmas part of Yishtabach?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's all included. Another hakpada, when you say a bracha l'kosos, a lot of people around the table, everyone has a kosos because it's dal kosos. So that, like we said before, everyone has their own chiv and dal kosos. A lot of people are not used to saying kiddush, and they're not used to, you know, different families have different minhagim. Some families, everybody recites the kiddush. Some families, not everybody recites the kiddush. One person recites and everyone else listens. But certainly for the other brachos, in almost every family, everybody says the brachos. But everyone has a kosher bracha in front of them. And a lot of people are unaccustomed to having kosher bracha in front of them. They're therefore not familiar with the halachas of kosher bracha. The halach is by kosher bracha, you're supposed to raise it a tefach off the table. In addition to that, the Gemara in the Seches Brachos in Parak Shlosh Shachlu says that a kosher bracha requires shtifa v'hadacha. So Magen Avraham writes that, yeah, shtifa v'hadacha means to rinse out the kos to make sure that it's clean. But Magen Avraham says, if last time you used the kos, you cleaned it out, and then you dried it up, and then you put it in the cabinet, and you close the cabinet, so it's clean. Next time you take it out, you don't need a new shtifa v'hadacha. Kaf HaChaim says that that al pi Kabbalah, it's kedai to be machmir to always do shtifa v'hadacha on a kosher bracha. So even if you know that it's clean to do shtifa v'hadacha, so there are those that are machmir. Certainly, if you're going to drink kol kos, it's a reasonable chumrah that to do shtifa v'hadacha each time you refill the kos. That there's going to be that the simple reading of the Gemara is that that's what you're supposed to do. Okay, so we're not so makbid about it. We don't do it all the time. But the simple reading of the Gemara is that's what you're supposed to do. So Rav Kook thought that before each kos you should rinse out. Rav Shapta quotes from Rav Kook that you should rinse out the kos before each kos as a fulfillment of shtifa v'adacha. Again, a chumrah, not something that's necessarily 100% required because your kos is clean. No one else has used it besides for you since the beginning of the Seder. Very often you didn't finish everything that's in the kos, so it would be wasteful of the wine to start pouring it all out. Certainly if you're using Shemitah wine, you're not allowed to pour it out, so you shouldn't be doing a shtifa v'adacha. That would be a chumrah that's maybe the day kula, but you know, it's an interesting chumrah that you don't lose much when you do that chumrah.
Does it sound to me you have to make sure it's dry from the water?
No, I don't think there's a din that needs a nigur. I don't think you need to try it. The outside of the coast maybe, but the inside I think they dafka dilute a little. Now, let's see. Another. Quite the first Mishnah Pesach in Avri Pesachim tells us that Erev Pesach Sabbath Mincha lo yochal adam ad shetech shach. A person is not supposed to eat ad shetech shach. So usually there's a din called Tosefa Shabbos, which at least applies to the Isur Malacha, right? Meaning we start in Isur Malacha, we're most of Mechal al HaKodesh, and we start in Isur Malacha earlier, normally on Shabbos and Yom Tov. As far as the mitzvos hayom, the Gemara is a suffix whether Tosefa Shabbos applies to the mitzvos hayom or not, or at least that's the simple reading of the Gemara. The Gemara is Mesupak about Rav. The Gemara Mesachas Brachos, whether Rav would be Yotze Kiddush in the Zman of Tosefa Shabbos, right? Meaning we know he would stop doing Malacha, because that you have to do, it could be Dinda Reis of Tosefa Shabbos, that you stop doing Malacha, you're mostly Mechol al Kodesh. What about being Yotze the Mitzvah? So the Gemara concludes that Rav did say Kiddush during the Zman Tosefes. So it could be that the Gemara Suffolk is whether the Zman Tosefes is Nogeya to the Mitzvah Salayla, to the Mitzvah Sayom, or only to the Isurei Malacha. Others, however, understand that by Tosefa Shabbos is clearly only relevant to Issa Malacha. And when it comes to Mitzvah Sayom, like Suda Shabbos, you can't be Yotze in the Zman Tosefes. The reason that Rav said Kiddush earlier is that the function of Kiddush might be just to enhance the Shvisa Mimalacha. Meaning, we discussed Shvisa Hanikeres. How do you make it that the Shvisa Mimalacha is a Shvisa Hanikeres? By saying Kiddush and showing that the fact that I'm not doing Malacha is because of Kiddush HaSayom. But it could be for the actual mitzvah sayom, it could be that you are not Yotze in the Zman HaTosefes, and you need to wait until Tzeis HaKochavim. And the other Shita in Tosefos holds that the entire meal can be Mibod Yom, you could even do the mitzvah sayom in the Zman HaTosefes. So Tosefos assume that on Pesach, when we say that you're not allowed to eat Ad Shetech Shach, it means that even if you're being Mosef Mechol HaKodesh, the Tosefos Yom Tov does not help you with respect to Achilas Korban Pesach, and Mela doesn't help you with respect to the other mitzvos halayla either, because all of the mitzvos halayla are tafel to the Achilas Korban Pesach. So so that's why you have to wait Tafka Ad Shetech Shach. Tos HaRash in Brachos Tafka Zayin holds that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Achilas Korban Pesach in Zman HaTosefes as well. So 2 days in the Balei HaTosefos. Is Tosefes Yom Tov enough to allow you to fulfill the mitzvah salayla, or is it not enough to allow you to fulfill the mitzvah salayla? So we assume generally that on the night of the Seder, the mitzvah salayla have to be done after Tzeis HaKachavim. All the mitzvah salayla have to be done after Tzeis HaKachavim. So that's why we try not to start the Seder until after Tzeis HaKachavim. So where's the Chumrah? That's the Ikar HaDin, and it's something that people are makbir about. So here's what I'm going to suggest. I think people start too late. I think people start, they first start deciding where's everybody going to sit, and the children start fighting over which pillow they're going to use, and everything. All of that starts at Tzeis HaKachavim. I think we should start getting things rolling, like 15 minutes before Tzeis HaKachavim, because on the tail end we're going to lose. Meaning that we do have to make sure that we finish by Chatzos. So it's kedai to get things going. Meaning, if let's say you're having, like in my family, we most often have one Seder at my sister's house and one Seder at my house. My sister lives 2 blocks from us. So this year, we're having the first Seder at my sister's house and the second Seder at my house. So I don't know where we are for the first day lunch. If we're at my house, it's not going to help us. But if let's say you're not going to be at that table until the second Seder night, you could set the whole table for the Seder before Yom Tov even starts, so that as soon as you come home, you can go right, as soon as it's Chav Mitz, you can go right into the Seder. You probably shouldn't delay so much. The other Chumrah, just that's not a Chumrah, that's just Tama Ha'ara. The Chumrah to add over here is not Pesach related, it's Shabbos related. Rav Shachter often points out that the Mishaburah's Mesupach, whether a person can be Yotze the mitzvah of Suda Shabbos during the Zman HaTosefes. We're making, because the Gemara says that you can say Kiddush on Shabbos during the Zman HaTosefes. Once you start making early Shabbos, though, the Mishaburah's Mesupach, whether you can be Yotze the mitzvah of Suda Shabbos when it's Miba'od Yom. And therefore, the Mishaburah recommends you should eat challah after Tzeis HaKochav. Make sure to save a little bit of challah. How much challah? Machlokas. Either a kazayis, a kebetza, or more than a kebetza. Right? Some say kazayis because that's achila. Others say, no, that's only an achila sarai. In order to be achilas keva, you need to have a kebetza, or maybe even more than a kebetza. But a person should set aside a certain amount of challah that they only eat after Tzeis HaKochav. I remember if Shachter once came to my house to our community for Shabbos, and it was during the summertime, it was like May, and we were making early Shabbos that we could do a Friday night question and answer session with Rav Shachter. And Rav Shachter took the train from the OU office to the Valley Stream train station, so I picked him up from the train, and when we were driving back from the train station, he was asking me what the schedule is. So I said, oh, we're making early Shabbos, and then tonight at 8 o'clock, we're going to have a question and answer session in the shul. He said, you know, I was in Germany recently, and when I was there, in the yeshiva, they made early Shabbos, and they had the suda right away. And he said, I was so surprised that in the yeshiva they didn't know that you're supposed to have a kibetz of bread after Tzeis HaKochavim. I'm like, why is he telling me this? And then I'm like, oh, because I scheduled a question and answer session with him before Tzeis HaKochavim, so that the meal is necessarily going to have to be over before Tzeis HaKochavim. So I said, oh, so we should probably not do the question and answer session at 8 o'clock, even though we made the flyers and everything ready. He's like, yeah, whatever you want, you know. So that night in shul, I announced, I know the flyer says 8 o'clock, we're doing it at 9 o'clock, because we have to have a kibetz of bread after Tzeis HaKochavim. So a lot of people are not aware of that, or not makbir about that, and it's something that's kedai to be makbir about, as we're going, this isn't a Pesach Chumra, but this is like a post-Pesach Chumra, meaning going into the summer months, where many of us are going to be making early Shabbos, and especially if you're makbir about your Zman, so you don't do the weird 7 o'clock Zman, you do an actual Zman, like Plag HaMincha, so then it's very tough to stretch the meal out sometimes long enough to make sure that you're having a kibetz of bread after Tzeis HaKochavim, but it's kedai to be machmir like that. Like you're in St. Petersburg? Yeah. Okay. I don't know what he did there. You asked that. Do you know? Do you know what he did?
No, I don't. I know. Someone told me that they're going somewhere where there's no Tzeis
HaKochavim. I know when Rav Shachter was in St. Petersburg in the summer, we were in the OU office, and he was thinking about. He always Rabbi Isaac Rice. We do a lot of the research for him. Because he would say, which Gedolim lived in this community? And what did they write? So Rabbi Rice would go to Hebrew books and print out all the Svarim that were written by the Gedolim that ever lived there, and Rav Shachter would take a day and just read all of the Svarim so that he could lead the tours and say, Divrei Torah from all the Gedolim that live in those communities. So when he was going to St. Petersburg, he said, he realized that the sun never dips the proper number of degrees below the horizon during the summertime to qualify as Tzeis HaKhadim. So he said, what are we going to do about ending Shabbos? So he had almost a panic attack. Like, it was like, oh, how did I agree to go here? Like, what? Then he realized it's St. Petersburg. He said, Rav Itzel Petterberger lived there. What did Rav Itzel Petterberger do? We have to do the research. We have to find what Rav Itzel did. And then we can know what to do. I think he might have kept Shabbos till Chatzos. I'm not sure what he did. So I don't know if he waited till Chatzos on Friday night to have another Kavetzer, but I don't know what he did about that. We could ask him. Another reasonable chumra, just to point out, there is, we make fun sometimes, and probably the pendulum has swung too much in the other direction. It's very hard to find the exact medium of how crazy people get about cleaning for Pesach. If you ask your grandmothers how to clean for Pesach, it was an entirely different experience probably than your mothers / wives or whatever. Meaning that it used to be you weren't allowed anywhere, in that you had to put on special boots to walk into the house, for a month before Pesach, and you had to take a toothbrush and clean the moldings on the side, everything was that's insane, right? That's not normal, and it's not necessary. However, I find that I think someone told me recently that Rav Neuberger said that it used to be by our bubbies, she was told that she can't fast on Yom Kippur because it's dangerous for her, she would call the rabbi and beg to please be allowed to fast on Yom Kippur. And nowadays, every shayla is, okay, so rabbi, how am I not going to fast on Yom Kippur? How do I get out of it? How do I get out of the chiv? It's like a totally different... So we probably need to find a happy medium in the cleaning for Pesach thing also. It shouldn't be nothing. It should be something. So I remember we used to always vacuum out the chairs in the dining room. That was the thing. You would take a vacuum cleaner, you vacuum out the crumbs from the chairs in the dining room, until I learned in yeshiva. And I learned that there's no issur bal yirah bal yimatzeh on anything that's pachas mikazayas. So what are you cleaning out the chairs in the dining room? The worst that there is that there are crumbs there. There's no issur bal yirah bal yimatzeh of crumbs. So I would suggest the following happy medium. You don't need to clean out the crumbs behind your furniture. You don't need to clean out the crumbs under your bed, because you're not going to come to eat those crumbs. The halacha is a mashul chametz asur b'achila. Anywhere that's in an area that you are eating, even if it seems somewhat far-fetched that you'd actually stick your hand in your chair and pull out a crumb and eat it, but it's in an area where you are eating and there are crumbs around that are chametz, it makes sense. It's a nice chumra to clean out those crumbs. If it's in an area where you're not going to be eating, okay, then it might be an excessive chumra to worry about that every crumb. But if it's in a place where it's in a context of achila, then I think that it makes sense. Another appropriate chumra, if we can call it that, is that magid, the mitzvah of magid, is a real mitzvah. You're really supposed to do it. Which means that it shouldn't come, it means a couple things. First of all, it should be done somewhat, it should be kept moving, because very often people slow it down so much that it comes at the expense of chinuch in all the mitzvah salayla. Forget about your own mitzvah salayla. So let's say you're willing to stay up late, you're willing to eat late, if the kids have fallen asleep by the time it's time to eat matzah, or they're not at the table anymore, they're not interested anymore, then you've lost the opportunity to be mechanech children in the actual mitzvah salayla, right? In many of the mitzvah of matzah, the mitzvah of maror, the mitzvah of korech, right? These are things that are also part of our obligation of chinuch, is to train them in that as well. But if we schlep the magid along so much, so it's better to, chot fin matzos, according to some of the Rishonim, means to rush through so that everybody's still awake and engaged by the time you do the mitzvah salayla. Rashi, in his second interpretation of chot fin matzos, and the Rabbi understand that it means, chot fin matzos means to eat quickly so that you don't fall asleep. That fits with the next line of the Gemara, because the very next line after chot fin matzos talks about Rabbi Kiva leaving the base medrash to make sure that the Seder would start on time. right? Because you want to make sure that things move expeditiously. Shulchan Aruch quotes that in some of the Tafayim Beis as well. Another thing to be makbid about, Tosus has a chiddush that you have to eat a kazayis each from the prusa and from the shlema. Mishabur is not so excited about that chiddush. The Baal Yatos said this chiddush that for matzah you need to eat two kazayim when you wash, two kazayim of matzah, one from the shlema, one from the prusa. Why? Because the prusa is lechem oni and the shlema is your regular lechem mishna, your regular sudas yamtuv. So you should, for sudas yamtuv, you should have one kazayis from the shlema, and for lechem oni you should have another kazayis. And Tosus thought that it would be a violation of chavilos for both the mitzvah sudas yamtuv and the mitzvah matzah to be on the same matzah. It would be a violation of chavilos to have that one kazayis. Someone told me that it doesn't make sense to me, but someone told me that Rav David Feinstein said that since all of our kazayim are coming from the box anyway, it's not coming from, meaning we're taking very little off of the shlema and very little off of the prusa anyway, and then we're being mashlim with so much more matzah from the box anyway, that there's no Indian anymore to have two kazayis, because you're not having a kazayis from the shlema and from the prusa. But I didn't understand that, because the whole reason is that of having two kazayis is that it shouldn't be chavilos, that one kazayis should represent the sudas yom tov and the other kazayis should represent the mitzvah of lechem oni. So I get that. La halacha, we assume that the geder of the mitzvah su'uda are the mitzvah salayla. Meaning, the Mishnah Berurah thinks that it's not necessary to be machmir about that, and you could have one kazayis of matzah, because it's not that there's two separate divim, like we said before. What makes the su'uda salayla? The mitzvah salayla define the su'uda salayla. Now, it happens to be, if that's the case, Rav Shapta points out, then we should follow those Rishonim that say you don't need three matzahs. Right, you should only need two matzahs, because if part of the mitzvah salayla is to have lechem oni, is to have a prusa, then that becomes your lechem mishnah also for the United States. To require lechem mishnah plus a lechem oni plus a prusa, that seems to be separating them out from each other, that there's the suda salayla and then there's the lechem oni. But if you hold that the nature of the suuda is defined by the mitzvah salayla, then the prusa should be one of the lechem oni. I think the Talmidim of Halajin were always held that way, that they only had two matzahs. I think Rav Soloveitchik even only had two matzahs, and that they did like that. That was their practice. But I would just say, at the very least, if someone has Crohn's or some other type of digestive issue where they're not able to have two kazayim, it would be a chumrah to dafka have one kazayim. It would be a chumrah to dafka, because if you have two kazayim, you're being mekel in the mitzvah of oneg yom tov and simchas yom tov. And a person should be machmir to have one kazayim. Probably better for a person who has digestive issues to have a kazayim of svardi matzah. Again, to be machmir so that they can make sure they can eat a kazayis of matzah, because the airspace in the svardi matzah also counts toward the kazayis, right? Because it's not pockets of air; it's just soft. So that airspace counts toward the shear. So they should probably, that's better to do. Another chumrah, if you can call it a chumrah or hakpada. And again, this one certainly is really only if you're calling the shots. Rav Shachter often points out that the Gemara tells us that there's a machlokas tanayim, whether charosas is only for health reasons to kill the bacteria of the marar, or whether charosas is a mitzvah. Machlokas chamim v'azvar tzadik, whether charosas is a mitzvah or not. So in the Bavli it says, okay, and if charosas is a mitzvah, what's the mitzvah? So the Bavli gives two possibilities of what the nature of the mitzvah is. Either it's a mitzvah drabanan as a zecher l'tapuach, or it's a zecher l'tit. Either it's a zecher to the tachas ha-tapuach, that the women would wait for their husbands, tachas ha-tapuach, in order to ensure the continuity of the Jewish people, or it's a zecher l'tit, which is the cement that we would mix in Mitzrayim, that we'd have to make in Mitzrayim. And therefore, the Gemara says that we should make a thick charoses, we should make like a thick, mushy substance for charoses, and that's a zecher l'tit, that's a zecher to the cement. And also tzorich lekayuhe, we should also make it, probably means acidic, because a zecher tapuach, you should put a tapuach in the charoses. So Rav Shachter often points out, the Tosfos says beferish in the end of Maseches Tainus, that the word tapuach in Shas does not mean, in Mishnayos, certainly does not mean an apple. It means a citrus fruit. They didn't have apples in the Middle East at that time. In Middle Eastern countries, they grow really delicious citrus fruits. Tachas ha-tapuach probably means under a citrus tree of some sort. And therefore, when you're making charoses, you could put apples in. There's nothing wrong with putting apples in. And certainly if you tell your mother or your bubby that they have to change the charoses recipe and not put apples in, duck right after you say that, because you're going to, you know, it's not going to go well. But if you have the ability to pour a little orange juice in the charoses, or a little lemon juice in the charoses, so that's probably the appropriate thing to do as a zecher tapuach. The Yerushalmi adds a third reason of what it's a zecher to. The Yerushalmi says that it's a zecher l'dam. That's what the Rishonim point out, that we should also pour red wine into the charoses, because most of the ingredients of the charoses are not absorbent. So when you pour red wine in, not only does it give the whole charoses a little reddish tinge, but it also, you have red puddles. You end up with some red puddles in the charoses. And that's a zecher l'dam. Rishonim say better not to do that in a time where there are blood libels. Right, that's a little risky, but in a time where there are no blood libels, so then it's a good idea to pour some red wine into the charoses as well. How do we paskin? Do we paskin like the chacham that it's not a mitzvah at all, that it's just to kill the bacteria on the maror so that the maror won't be dangerous for us? Or do we paskin like Rav Elazar ben Tzadik that it is a mitzvah? So Rav Shatter often points out, he writes in Eretz Tzvi, that in Pirush HaMishnayis, the Rambam says that it has to be a reshus, because if it were a mitzvah, then there would be a bracha, Asher Kishav Mitzvah Sitzvanu, al achilas charoses. And there is no such bracha. Elamai, you see that we pass on Eretz Roshos, that it's not a mitzvah. Problem is, in Mishnah Torah, the Rambam paskens that it's a mitzvah, midrabanan, and even though we don't say a bracha. So something changed from what he said in Pirush HaMishnayis, what he said in Mishnah Torah. Right? In Pirush HaMishnayis, he says, the raya that it's a reshus and not a mitzvah, is because if it were a mitzvah, then there would have to be a birchas mitzvah. And then in Mishnah Torah, he says, it is a mitzvah, and there's no birchas mitzvah. So, and that's why the Rambam gives the ingredients to the charoses, because if it were just a reshus, if we're just to kill the bacteria, I don't need the Rambam to teach me a science lesson of what kills bacteria, what doesn't kill bacteria, whatever you want. I don't care what you make it out of. But if the Rambam is going to give me ingredients, he's not writing a recipe book. It must be, because he holds that it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, zecher l'tit, zecher l'tapuach, zecher l'dam. So that's why he's giving me the ingredients of what you're supposed to put into it. Rav Shachter said that Rav Chaim used to make his own charoses. Rav Salvechik said that his grandfather, Rav Chaim, wouldn't trust anybody else to make the charoses. He wanted to make sure that it had all the right ingredients, that he would make his own charoses, because he probably, with the Rambam in hand, right, he was probably reading exactly what the ingredients should be for, you know, all due respect to whatever, to you know, Naomi Nachman and Susi Fishbane and all that. You know, the Rambam probably, Rav Chaim probably used a Rambam to make his charoses. Tosos in the last half of Pesachim says that we have dinim of it, meaning, so the question begs itself, according to the Rambam, why don't we say a bracha on the charoses? So Tosos has a chiddush in the end of Pesachim that you have dinim of ikar and tafel when it comes to brachos. That we know from Pesach's brachos. When it comes to birchas hanen, you have dinim of ikar and tafel. Tosos in the chiddush, even by birchas mitzvahs, you have dinim of ikar and tafel. That if you have two mitzvahs that go together with each other, and one mitzvah is the ikar and the other mitzvah is the tafel, the birchas mitzvah only applies to the ikar. And that's why Tosos says, and he says in the following context, that you bring a carbon chagigas arba asar, chagigas yudalid. So that carbon is tafel to the carbon pesach. So you only say a bracha on the carbon pesach, because carbon pesach is the ikr, the chagigas arba asar is the tafel. So you'd only say a bracha on that. So it could be that that's why you don't say a bracha on the charosis, because the charosis is added together with the maror. The maror is the ikr, the charosis is the tafel. So it could be that charosis is a mitzvah, but you're not going to say a birchsa mitzvah on it, because it's a mitzvah that's a tafel to a bigger mitzvah, to the maror. Rav Shachter has a whole nother mahalich in Eretz HaTzvi as to why there's no bracha on charosis, where he suggests that there's no maisa mitzvah. That even though you do eat charosis, and eating is a maisa, but the purpose of the eating charoses is to create a zecher. And the real mitzvah is the zecher. And that doesn't involve any maisa. You're eating the charoses because that's what you do with it, since it's a food item. But that's not a real maisa mitzvah. Anytime that something is just there as a zecher is the real mitzvah, and the zecher does not involve a maisa. And generally, birchsa mitzvah are always said on a maisa mitzvah, not on a kiyum mitzvah. That's why if you move into a house, let's say you move into an apartment, and the last person that lived there was a firm person, And the halacha is that when you are moving out of an apartment and you know that the next person living there is a frum person, and you know that they're not going to be painting in between, halacha is you got to leave the mezuzahs. So if you walk into an apartment and you move in and there are mezuzahs already on the door, you do not recite a birchsa mitzvah on the mezuzah. Why? Because it's there already. You're not doing a maisa mitzvah. Ah, it's a kiyuma mitzvah. Now I'm being mekayim the mitzvah of ladur b'bayi sheyesh bo mezuzah. So I'm being mekayim the mitzvah, but you're not doing a maisa mitzvah. Agav, you should just know that din that you have to leave mezuzahs for the next person is a din in your day. It's not a din in chosh mishpat. So a lot of people are unaware of that. Meaning that if the next you have to leave the mezuzah because you can't leave the house unprotected, but you have no requirement to gift expensive mezuzahs to somebody else. You could then call the person up and say, "I'd like you to pay me for the mezuzahs that I left there," and they'd be obligated to pay you if they want to keep the mezuzahs, or they have the option of buying their own mezuzahs and replacing them. You're just not allowed to. It's a din yoredeya that you're not allowed to leave the house unprotected from a mezuzah. But anyway, that's about the charosis. So again, the chumrah about the charosis, I wouldn't call it a chumrah. I would call it a proper hakpada, is to make sure to add a little bit of citrus, something, a little bit of citrus juice in it, and to make sure to add a little bit of wine to be yotzei, that red wine to be yotzei that sheet of the Yerushalmi. Most charosis recipes do have red wine. Many do not have any sort of citrus juice in it.
Going back to the previous one about the two mason ones, so we have three Seder, should we have one or should we have two? Is it a
chumrat? Generally speaking, we try to be machmir to have two kazeis. And if you can, but I'm saying that if a person has digestive issues, the proper chumrat is to have one. That would be the chumrat. Another important ha'ara, which again is not a chumrat, just a ha'ara. One of the differences between the mitzvah of sipur tzitzis mitzrayim and the mitzvah of zechiras tzitzis mitzrayim is that sipur is a sipur dvarim to other people. That Zechiras Tzitzis Mitzrayim is said to yourself. Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim is b'derech shel teshuva, and it's to somebody else. That's why the Rambam writes that if a person doesn't have children, so he should do Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim to his wife. You should be speaking, having a conversation with somebody else. What sometimes happens at some Siddurim is that there's a lot of conversation, even in the Haggadah, but all the conversation is about Halach Ma'anya, and it's about the Ma'is of Reb Lazar, you know, about the Tanayim, and Reb Lazar ben Azariah, and Yikiven Shem Shana, and by the time, none of that is actually Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim. That's all Sheila Tshuva. And then when you get to actually the Sipur Tzitzis Mitzrayim, everyone just quickly reads through it. Everyone just runs through it because, they, you know, we got to move on. No one has any good to talk about this anyway. Kids don't have a single gematria about, you know, about any. The Haggadah has all these gematrias with the 50 makas and the 250 makas, whatever. But no one, none of the kids have any gematrias about that. So you end up not doing the actual Sipur. So it's important in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim to remember that when you're doing the actual Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that there has to be a conversation that it should be between different people. Rav Shapta also points out that the halacha is that a suma is pater from the Haggadah, and therefore a suma cannot be motzi others in the Haggadah. He says a lot of times in a family, the Zaidi is already old and he's blind or whatever, and I don't know how many Zaidis are blind, but Rav Shapta always says the Zaidi's always blind and he doesn't know the whole Haggadah by heart, but he knows Kiddush by heart, so he's motzi everyone in Kiddush. So for Kiddush, that's fine, for the mitzvah of Kiddush. Problem is, the mitzvah of Kiddush is also a mitzvah of Dalet Kosos and a mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rav Shapta often points out, he quotes the Nesivus, although if you look at the Nesivus, he doesn't say it exactly this way, but he quotes the Nesivus that says that the reason we don't say a bracha on the Magid, the reason we don't say a bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, is because the yesod is that any time a mitzvah is itself a bracha, you don't recite a bracha on the mitzvah that itself is a bracha. Meaning, for example, before benching, you don't say Hashem Kesham Tzolzul Yitzvanu Levarich Achar Amazon, because the mitzvah itself is to say a bracha. Before you recite Havdalah, you don't say Hashem Kesham Tzolzul Yitzvanu Lahavdil Ben Kol Shechol and then say Havdalah, because the mitzvah itself is a bracha. Before Kriya Shema, you don't say Hashem Kesham Tzolzul Likros Shema, because the mitzvah itself is done within the context of the Birchos Kriya Shema, even though they aren't really Birchos HaMitzvah, but that's the way you fulfill that mitzvah. So Rav Shapta quotes from the Nesivus, again, Kedai to look it up, but he quotes from the Nesivus that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is said in the context of the Dalit Brachos Halakos, of four Brachos Halakos. So since it's said in the context of four Brachos Halakos, it's Ki'ilu, it's a mitzvah that's being Mekuyam with a bracha, and therefore you wouldn't recite a bracha on it. But what that tells you is, and Rav Shach said this is the way Rav Soloveitchik said it, what that tells you is that the mitzvah of Kiddush, when you're saying the first bracha on the coast, that's not only Kiddush, it's also Sibur Yitzis Mitzrayim, because you're being Mekayim and Sibur Yitzis Mitzrayim within the context of these four brachas. That's also Sibur Yitzis Mitzrayim. And a blind person can't be motzi in Sibur Yitzis Mitzrayim, so one should be makbid that they not have the, if you happen to have a blind Zaydi, that the blind Zaydi should not be motzi everybody else in the Kiddush, because Tzipur Yitzis Mitzrayim is about for Zeh B'Shal Shish Matzah Mor Menachem L'Fanachem, which means you have to be more Batz, but you have to be able to point to it, to look at it, say this. You can't do that if a person is blind. Then the most important, not the most important, but a very important Hakpada that people should have, and not enough people are makbid about, is that it's Kedai to finish the Afikoman by Chatzos, like the Shulchan Aruch says, and really ideally the Dalet Kosos by Chatzos. Again, if you're running your own Seder, there is the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer that people rely on. There are many, many kashas on the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer. There are a lot of issues with the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer. Rav Pam is quoted in Rav Pam on the festivals or something that if your wife is going to be upset because she spent all this time preparing a meal and you're going to be rushing through the meal because I got to get to the Afikoman, so he said that's a chumra, maybe the dekula, you're trying to be machmir on the Afikoman at the expense of your wife. But at the same time, if you're able to move the whole Seder along in a way where it naturally finishes in time, so really that's the proper thing to do, much more proper than relying on the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer. So those are some of the chumras and hakpados to think about over the course of Pesach. Okay, have a good day, everybody.